The Silk Road was the historic crossroads between East and West. During its heyday, news traveled only as fast as people did, whether they were on foot or on camels. So what's the new Silk Road, the place where East and West now meet? Well, it might be the blogosphere. Consider this story, an American professor who struck up an email friendship with a woman in Iraq.
In November of 2006, my friend, a professor at a university in Iraq, wrote to me by email. On the first day of Eid, I visited the graveyard where my father's grave is. I visited also my lifelong dearest late friend, the chair of a department, who was assassinated in the most atrocious way in August of 2004. Seeing her corpse in the forensic department, I realized they smashed half of her head by 33 bullets after they had tortured her by bullets in her hands as she was trying to call her father through her mobile when she was driving her car on her way to the university. I miss both so much, but I thought that the dead might be at rest now, the death we are craving and anguishing for. God bless you.
Susan Friedman is a University of Wisconsin English professor who specializes in feminist interpretations of literature. One day in June of 2005, she got a letter from a graduate student in Iraq asking for scholarly advice. Friedman started to correspond with the student and even sent her books, though at times she had to rip them in half to comply with the U.S. Postal Service rule that no package to Iraq can weigh more than 12 ounces. Her email correspondence soon put Friedman in touch with the student's professor, and it offered a unique look into the dangerous world of Iraqi universities, where hundreds of professors have been assassinated. Susan Friedman told Anne Strainchamps that her friend, the Iraqi professor, is plagued by constant stress.
Daily life is very tough. She's lucky if she has 2 to 4 hours of electricity a day. She is not living in Baghdad. I'd prefer not to say where she's living. She's living in a city where there's a lot of violence. And so they don't have basic services at all. And I'll read from one of her emails that certainly gives me a sense of her daily life. She writes, "I'm trying to survive amid all the crises. It's very cold, and there's no fuel or cooking gas, benzene or electricity. More than that, my health condition is worsening with a strange mass that is enlarging on my right ovary. I do not know what to do amid these circumstances. Just today, as I was in the gynecologist's clinic, a fierce attack against the police shocked us all that made people lock their shops and move in panic in cars on wrong sides. Even the doctor herself was so much horrified as the American military helicopters started to bomb the market that was fraught with people in a rush hour." She concludes, "Please keep in touch. Thanks, for you give me a real sense of life. Lots of love."
What is it like for you sitting in your quiet academic office and getting emails like this? And how often do you get
this emails? This is a great question. I typically get emails every day. And if I answer them right away, they're answered immediately. And it makes it hard for me to work. I'm emotionally very wrenched by these emails. And sometimes I can't answer them right away. I know that, in some sense, my country's invasion of her country is what opened a can of worms. And so I feel the ethical situation as an American. So we write to each other across a huge chasm.
Is she in much danger?
She's in terrible danger. For reasons I don't fully understand, professionals in Iraq have been targeted by other Iraqis for assassination.
Academics especially?
Academics and doctors and teachers. Teachers K through 12 and also university and college professors have been targeted, and hundreds have already been assassinated.
Has she been threatened?
Most recently, she has been threatened specifically with assassinations. I'll read from an email that I received in January. "Thanks a lot for all your efforts. The explosion scared us here today. Today, the university received a formal threat to all university professors, officials, etc., to be killed, and the university was in panic. I do hope that they will ask us to sit at home. Assassinations are going on. Today, I read 4 black obituary placards at the outer university walls carrying the names of the professors who were assassinated in 1 week. That's the first direct threat to her university. But more recently, she has personally received an assassination threat. And she wrote on April 16th of this year, "I've just been informed by the head of the department where I'm working that me, him, and another colleague are threatened to be killed by what's called the," I'm just not going to read the name of the group. "A letter was dropped into his room. The letter contains the threat and a bullet. They say if we do not improve our dealing with our students, this is one of the tens of bullets to be killed with." And then most recently, a little later, she writes, "My dear Susan, I am in panic as two university scholars have just been assassinated. They got their threats a week ago. They have the same text, the same source, the same signature. The news is there on Al Jazeera channel after 1 hour of their assassination. I have no other choice than staying at home. My brother brought the letter of threat to me at home with the seal on it. It contains verses from the Quran that threaten the infidel with severe punishment." So I was in a panic. If I don't hear from her for a couple of days, I think, well, maybe she's been killed.
Yeah.
So she didn't go to her campus for 2 weeks. The university president threatened to fire the professors who didn't come to campus.
Even though they were under death threats.
Right. He said, "We have to stand up. We have to have courage." And her family is begging her, "Please, please don't go." So she finally went back to campus, and she wrote me in an email that she was surrounded by her students and colleagues and friends hugging her, kissing her, telling her, "Please don't come to campus. You have to leave the country."
You know. Given this level of danger, is it possible at all for her to leave Iraq?
Well, it's very difficult to get into either Europe or the United States because of a new law, and that is the law that you have to have what's known as a G passport in order to get a visa to either the Europe or the United States. And most Iraqis have been issued an S passport. And the only way you can get a G passport is to go personally to Baghdad and get it there. Baghdad is very dangerous. And for someone of this professor's background, she is quite convinced that she would simply be killed, raped, and her body abandoned if she were to go to Baghdad to try to get the proper kind of passport. Mm-hmm. So what she did was she spent a year's salary to give to a man who said he could get the passport for her. And she had no idea whether it was a fraud or a sham, but she didn't herself dare to go to Baghdad. And I got this letter from her in the middle of March. "My dearest Susan, how can I go to Baghdad? Our neighbor, a young taxi driver, a father of four kids, was captured in Baghdad by the militias. Their family were in a panic looking for him. They were informed after a long and difficult negotiation with men in the dark that he was killed and his corpse was in Najaf. They paid tens of thousands of dollars to claim his body. They were led to a mass grave in Najaf where they could dig his body up, and they brought it back to our home. He was disfigured as he was drilled from toe to top. He was tortured to death. The family, I saw his mother in front of their house, a few meters from ours, tearing her hair and beating her body, tearing her clothes. His sister and wife were doing the same, and their men trying to cover their naked bodies as the bier was brought down from the car. It was a scene I've never seen in my life. I cried for days. I was insomniac with excruciating pains, and I could not bear up with it. I remembered him when he was going to the university. He was very studious, courteous, and handsome."
I can't imagine you can do anything after you receive one of these.
It's very hard to sit down and prepare my classes and talk with students and go to meetings and worry about the things that we worry about in Wisconsin.
Do you have to be careful at all in what you write to her in any way? Or do you have the sense that there are things that she cannot or would not write to you about?
It's interesting. I have a sense that she doesn't censor her emails. She's very afraid to step outside her door, but she's not afraid to write these incredible descriptions to me about what's going on. So she must not fear that somebody's reading her email and that she'll get in trouble for what she says.
Susan Friedman is an English professor at the University of Wisconsin. She talked with Anne Strangechamps.